why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful, wonderful week so far. So this week has been quite delightful here in New York City. The weather has been great. It's been sunny pretty much every single day. I was able to go to work bare legs for the last 2 days, meaning I was not wearing any stockings. So it looks like spring is probably on its way. I know I keep talking about spring, and I feel like every time I mention spring, I jinx it because the next day it's winter wonderland. But I think it's safe to say that we are entering into the spring. So today's episode is going to be a little different. We're going to actually do a Hot Topics episode. So a lot of you guys have been sending me inbox gems over the last couple of weeks. And let me tell you, I really appreciate it because some of this stuff, you know, I don't get to always talk about the inbox gems that you guys send me. But today I thought that, you know what, you know, let's mix it up a little bit and let's address some of these inbox gems, because a lot of them I have some opinions on and I definitely want to share them with you. But even though our episode's going to be a little different today, we are not going to forego our preliminaries. So as always, it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
That's on fleek.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, you lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is scamazon. And the definition goes as such: ordering an item on Amazon and claiming it never arrived to your home, which results in a refund and you can keep the item. Interesting. Example: how'd you get that grinder? Response: I scamazoned it. Interesting, interesting, interesting. I don't know if anybody has actually used the word scamazon. Now, I'm very familiar with the concept. I have heard of individuals who would order things, maybe not necessarily from Amazon, but would order things in general and claim they never received it and got a refund from it. But now there's a term, scamazon. Interesting. So I know I only said that there was going to be one Urban Dictionary word, but there's another word that popped up into my feed that I thought was also very interesting. I feel like I've been seeing it around, so I think people are actually using it. So the word is capper, and the example goes, or the definition goes, a cap is a lie. A capper is a liar. So if someone is capping, they are lying. Example: that dude always saying something and never do shit. He's a capper. He would always cap over dumb shit. I feel like I've seen this word. So one of my friends, shout out to Marcus Aaron, recently came out with a single called No Cap. I'm wondering if that's what he's talking about. I'm going to have to reach out to him now and ask him if his title No Cap is referring to like no lie. Interesting, the things that we put together, huh? So those are this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrases of the week. So now we are on to, this is the point where I always talk about the big up of the week, but the big ups of the week and the womp womps of the week are kind of pretty much part of my Hot Topics segment for today's show. So I'll call it the big up of the week and I'll refer to them as womp womp, some of these things that I'll, you know, bring up today, but it's all going to be merged. So there's the big up and the womp womp are essentially the hot topics that we will be discussing. So same format, just a little bit different. So keep up with me. So one of the big ups of the week, or this week's, I think this is the only one that's a big up actually. Everything else is a womp womp. So the big up of the week goes to rapper T.I. So over the Easter holiday, rapper T.I. pretty much bailed out 23 prisoners in time to spend Easter with their families. And he did this with the support or in conjunction with the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church in Georgia. And so according to The Independent, 7 women and 16 men, all nonviolent prisoners and mostly first-time offenders, arrived home just in time for the holidays thanks to the bailout program. And I thought that this was very interesting. I mean, I'm sure this is not the first time, you know, rappers have engaged in such behaviors. But as I've said before in past shows, I really love seeing rappers actually taking responsibility for their community, stepping up and really just helping people out. I mean, I'm not here to tell people to, you know, what to do with their money. And it's also unfair to say that, well, because you have money, you are expected to do these things. But it's great to see people who are from the community who have, in a sense, made it give back in any way, to be very honest, because they don't necessarily have to do it. But I like to see that individuals who know they have the means to make some sort of change actually go forth and make this change. And so basically this program, it's not just about bailing people out, but it's actually a program, and each inmate is to be connected to a mentor, given job training and funds for their children's college savings in a bid to stop the cycle. So it's not just bailing these people out, but it's actually stopping the cycle, because we all know how this, you know, cycle continues, right? You bail them out today and then who knows, they might end up back in jail the next week or the next couple of months because of hardships. You know, it's not, a lot of times people, you know, they have their preconceived ideas of individuals who end up in the system. And, you know, just because you get out doesn't necessarily mean you're still able to thrive in the society without assistance. And so I love the fact that this bailout program provides assistance, and also not just with that individual, but with their children, and provides some sort of children's college saving fund. And so initially, the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church in Georgia, they were trying to raise $40,000 for the program in partnership with TI and also another reality star called Scrap Deleon. But the donations actually got up to $120,000. And so that's what was, you know, used to bail out these individuals. So, you know, T.I., I have my opinions of T.I. I mean, I don't hate T.I. I don't dislike T.I. There are a lot of artists out there that I would say that I genuinely dislike. But I will say that T.I., although I have my, you know, issues with him at times, I feel like he does do a good job of helping out the community in many different ways and being some sort of like positive role model-ish person to the community. I mean, T.I. has had his fair share of run-ins with the law. I mean, his gun charges and whatnot. So he's definitely not a saint. But I do, you know, acknowledge his efforts in trying to be part of some sort of solution within the community. The reason that I have issues with T.I. is I feel like sometimes he sticks his nose in business that really doesn't concern him. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. This Kodak Black situation, people have been talking about it for the last couple of weeks. I actually have steered clear of talking about it, not necessarily on purpose, but I feel like it didn't really jive with any of the content that I was putting out in the last couple of weeks. But many of you probably already know that Kodak Black had made some comments with regards to Lauren London, you know, right after Nipsey Hussle had passed away. And many people came out and said that it was very insensitive of him to make these comments when Nipsey just died. And, you know, they took it to be very offensive. And so T.I. comes out with his Instagram video basically like saying, yo, meet me on the corner, you know, like coming at Kodak Black to be respectful that he crossed the line and that, yo, like, you know, I'm out here and all this extra stuff. And I think Game even had come out and said some stuff too. But to be honest, I saw this Instagram live video and maybe it's just me, but I really didn't take it to be what everybody else was trying to make it to be. In the Instagram live video, somebody is recording Kodak Black. I hear that it was his phone that was recording. Okay, fine. But it wasn't him that was recording. Somebody else was recording an interaction, a conversation between Kodak Black and I think 3, 4, 5 other homies. And, you know, he had his shirt off and they were literally just chopping it up, having a conversation. And the topic of Lauren London came out. And basically what Kodak Black was saying was that, yo, like, you know, Lauren London, I believe his quote was like, is about to be a whole widow out here. And that he was talking about how he would love to be the one to like comfort her if she'd let him. It wasn't anything about, yo, I'm going to smash that shorty right now. Like, I didn't see anything disrespectful. The issue here is that Kodak Black doesn't have the best vernacular. He is from the streets. He is from the streets of Miami. We barely understand what Kodak Black says on a regular, like, hi, how are you? I don't even know. Like, I can't even tell, like, if he's saying, hi, how are you? We all know he has an interesting way of speaking. His accent is thick as hell. I don't even know if he has a great grasp of the English language. So, of course, whatever comes out of his mouth is going to come out twisted. And so when he's coming out saying, oh, you know, she about to be a whole widow out here, and that, you know, he'd love to be the one to comfort her, like, I didn't take it as anything disrespectful. I think what he was trying to say is that she's a widow. Nipsey is dead. And, he, you know, she's so, because she's such a beautiful woman, beautiful in spirit, beautiful in looks, he'd love to be the one to comfort if she'd let him. It's not, he didn't say, yo, I want to smash that. I want to tap that ass. Like, he didn't say that. And I don't know, maybe it's because I have a good understanding of hood talk and I could translate better, but that's exactly what I saw. And the fact that he was talking with his boys, and I like that people want to like skip over that fact. I think that's a very critical point of this entire story. There are many guys till this day having conversations in their men chat groups, in, you know, their close quarters with each other about Lauren London. It's baffling to me for people to think that nobody is having the same exact conversation that Kodak Black is having with his boys. It's like if Nipsey, if it was the other way around and Lauren London was, you know, had died and, you know, I was attracted to Nipsey Hussle and I'm here with my girls, I can see us having a conversation like, yo, man, Nipsey can get it. Or, you know, man, like, it's sad that Lauren's dead, but I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe he might, you know, maybe after a year, maybe he'll be ready to get out there. Like, these are the conversations that Kodak Black was having about Lauren London. And everybody is coming out, you know, with their panties in a bunch, making it seem like Kodak is being very disrespectful. Is Kodak a disrespectful individual? Yes. Yes, he is. So I could see why some people would like maybe quickly jump to it. But if you actually look and listen to the video, like, that's not what it was. It's a bunch of guys talking about what everybody is talking about in their little silos and in their little groups. But yeah, so for me, so when T.I. came out and was like, yo, trying to G-check him and all this extra stuff, I was just like, T.I., let's have a seat. Let's have a seat. And it's interesting because I did see a meme. I think it might have been a week after that where it was just like, I can't remember exactly what the meme said, but in a sense, the essence of it was that, you know, guys are coming out and G-checking other men for Lauren London because of the respect they had for Nipsey. So if it was some other random dude maybe, or some rapper that maybe didn't rise to the level of Nipsey Hussle that, you know, had passed away, would they check Kodak Black for talking about, you know, for talking about their woman? Like, it just, it's one of those things where it's like the respect only comes when the men respect the fallen, you know? So if it was somebody else, if it wasn't Nipsey, would T.I. have come out of his face and say the same thing? I mean, who knows? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, you know, him and Lauren have history in that they were in the movie ATL together and they're probably like little brother, little sister. I don't know. Either way, I'd wanted to make a comment on that because I feel like people were really being extra with all this Kodak Black, Lauren London thing. But moving quite along. So the big up of the week, back to T.I. The big up of the week goes to T.I. And the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church in Georgia for really just being out here trying to make a change and trying to end the cycle. I think that's the most important part of all of this. They're not just out here bailing people out, but they're actually doing what they need to do to end the cycle so that, you know, these people don't end up back in jail. And so that their kids also have, you know, some sort of a future. So I think that's definitely commendable and honorable. So now, moving along to some womp womps of the week. You know, sometimes I tell ya, I'll mix it up a little bit. So let's go to a womp womp, and then I have another big up of the week. So one of the womp womps of this particular week goes to James Madison High School. James Madison High School, that's located in Houston, Texas. So basically, the story goes as such. Jesus. So the school now has like some sort of policy or mandate. They have a new dress code that's aimed at parents that says no shower caps are allowed, no pajamas are allowed, no satin bonnets are allowed when you come to pick up your children. So you cannot pop up at this school with any of the things that I just said. And I found this to be very interesting. One of my friends, shout out to Lulu Bell, sent this to me in my inbox. And when I saw it, I was just like, this has to be a joke, right? Like, this can't be anything serious, because now there is a dress code against parents coming to pick up their kids in satin bonnet. And I'm like, when is this going to end? So now, pretty much, this took place, actually, I think April 9th is when this mandate was officially, like, sent to the parents. So one of the mothers, Jocelyn Lewis of Houston, Texas, was turned away from registering her daughter for school because of what she was wearing. And this was a report from KPRC. And pretty much the principal of the school is currently facing criticism right now. She's facing criticism because of this dress code that she decided to put into place. And so pretty much, I have to laugh sometimes. So basically, you know, any parent who shows up at the school in violation of this dress code will be kicked out, essentially. They will be kicked out from the school if they show up to the school in any of the attire that I mentioned not too long ago. So pretty much, they have prohibited clothing to include satin caps, shower caps, hair rollers, pajamas of any kind, jeans showing lots of skin, revealing leggings and tops, Daisy Duke shorts, undershirts, dresses that are up to your behind, and bonnets. And so the principal of this school, by the name of Carlotta Otley Brown, basically sent in a message that if you break any of these school rules or do not follow any of these rules, you will not be permitted inside the school until you return appropriately dressed for the school setting. She goes on to say in this message to parents that we do value your partner in you as a partner in your child's education, but went on to say we have to have standards. Okay, and so basically one of the parents who was actually hauled off by the police, it looks like, she showed up to school to enroll her daughter in a Marilyn, like it was like a t-shirt dress, a Marilyn Monroe t-shirt dress, and she had on a hair scarf. And so when the TV station interviewed her, she had a lot to say. And she basically was like, listen, I'm not trying to come up in here dolled up to go register my kid for school. Like, who does that, right? She's like, I can wear whatever the hell I want to wear. Like, I'm just here to register my kid for school. Like, what exactly are we really doing here? Like, why is it anybody's business what I choose to wear to register my child for school? And to be very honest, I mean, she kind of has a point. Like, obviously, if you have parents showing up with F the police t-shirts, maybe that might be something that you want to address, right? Although there is this thing called freedom of expression, freedom of speech, but I understand you have kids at the school, you might not want them to see any of this stuff, right? So I could understand when it comes to something like that, maybe why a school might want to censor or temper some of that, right? But to the point where you're saying that, you know, you're preventing parents from coming to the school to register their children, and you're telling them that they can't come to school with a head bonnet, like, it doesn't make any sense. And so in the article, there was also another mother who was interviewed, who basically said that this is the language that was used in this memo to parents was discriminatory and it was demeaning to them. Because, and it's funny because the same woman made a comment like, I'm African American. If it's misty outside, I'm going to wear a bonnet to protect my hair. So you're trying to tell me that I can't come to the school to drop off my child in a hair bonnet, and because for whatever reason, this is in violation of some sort of school code. And I tend to agree with her when it comes to that. There was another parent who was interviewed who came to school, who dropped off her daughter, or who came up to pick up her daughter, I believe, with a head bonnet as well. And she was actually, you know, on her way to a family emergency. So she didn't have time to go and, you know, I don't know, comb her hair or do whatever. So she came out in a hair bonnet, but it was an emergency. It was an family emergency that caused her to rush out the house, but she had to pick up her kid. And so because of that, this woman was handed a policy, a dress code policy, and basically said that, you know, if she does not come, if she cannot come to the school in proper attire to pick up her child, then she is not allowed to come on the school premises. And I find that to just be such a violation. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many, I just feel like the Black community is just under attack. They are under attack in every aspect. You know, now, I mean, I don't know how many of you, my mother has come to pick me up at school when I was in elementary school with hair rollers in her hair before. She's certainly come to pick me up from school in a muumuu before. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, it's just outrageous to me how this school feels as if they have the right to now tell parents. And we all know that this is really geared toward the Black community. I'm not saying that white people don't show up to schools with muumuus and hair rollers, but we know, I mean, let's be real here. We know who they are referring to when it comes to this particular rule. We know who the majority of these, I guess, the now offenders are going to be. We know our people. We know how they roll up to the school. They roll up in however way they want to roll up. And so I find that now there's just like, this is in a sense some sort of, I do find it to be discriminatory, to be very honest. I do find it to be discriminatory that you're now telling parents that they cannot come to school in hair rollers or a satin bonnet. And it's like, again, what is this satin bonnet? If we're all here for the education of our children, if the school is concerned about the education of the children and that is the purpose of the school and whatnot, what is somebody's hair bonnet going to do to you? Like, how is this hair bonnet offensive or against any type of like dress code? Like, how is it even? It's one thing to say students are not allowed to come to school wearing a hair bonnet. I understand that. Students are not allowed to be in class, to be on the premises, wearing Daisy Dukes or whatnot. I get that. But the parents who are coming to pick them up, it's not like the parent is out here coming to this PTA meeting and actually engaging and doing all. The parent is there to pick up their child from school or drop them off to school or to register them, like a quick in and out. How is their hair bonnet? How is their pajama or whatever? How is that muumuu interrupting what's going on in the school? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I feel like this is not going to be the last of these dress codes. This is not going to be the last of this discriminatory behavior that we are finding. And it's just like, you know, where is it going to end? When is it going to end? And so I don't know what the people of Houston or what the parents are planning on doing. But if I were them, I would, I mean, protesting, you know, I have my opinions on protesting, but something needs to be done. If I were them, I wouldn't just lay down and allow the school district or this particular principal, this school, to get away with this, because it is discrimination. It really is. And, you know, you can have your thoughts and ideas about it, you know, but my personal opinion is that this is crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And it is a personal attack to Black parents, to Black people. That's exactly what I feel like this particular, you know, dress code policy is aimed at achieving. It's discriminatory practice towards these parents, and it just doesn't make any sense, and it has to stop. And so I guess to balance this out, Well, actually, no, because I do want to end on a good note. So let me let me go to our last womp womp of the week, and then we can go to the big up to close off the show. I do want to end this show on a positive note. So the next womp womp of this week, it's very interesting to me, actually, how this is even a thing. So we all know that Notre Dame, the cathedral, was... you know, was compromised, I guess, for lack of a better word, about what, a week ago, maybe a week and change ago. It went up in flames. It didn't completely burn down, but there was extensive damage to the cathedral. Now, I have had the pleasure of, you know, going and visiting Notre Dame, and I will tell you, it is one of the most beautiful monuments I have ever seen. Being in the cathedral just gave me this like outer body experience. You know, you don't have to be Catholic to feel the energy of these cathedrals, of these, you know, these churches, of these sacred spaces. And it was simply breathtaking. And I am so happy that I had gotten an opportunity to actually go to France and visit the Notre Dame. However, yes, I feel bad that this monument, that this national or this global treasure has been compromised. I truly do, because I'm a big lover of the art. I'm a lover of history. I love monuments. I love these types of things. And so, yes, this is something that's been part of our global culture for, I don't know, decades, centuries. I don't know how old the Notre Dame is, but you get my drift. But what I'm seeing lately is a little disturbing to me. We have major companies like Apple, Louis Vuitton, L'Oreal, all these other companies who are donating millions upon millions of dollars for the restructuring and the reconstruction of La Notre Dame. It doesn't make any sense to me when we have children dying from bad water in Flint. I mean, the homeless population here in the United States is through the roof. I mean, I live in New York City. I see homeless people every single day. There are so many issues in our community affecting children, affecting elderly. This money could be going to, you know, strengthen programs, effectuate real change in the communities. And I'm not just even saying the Black community, because, you know, there are a lot of white homeless people on these streets as well, too. There are a lot of issues that are affecting the white community that needs funding as well. And this is where we're trying to send our money. I understand it's a landmark. I understand it's a global treasure. But the amount of money that I am seeing being pledged to the reconstruction of La Notre Dame is very concerning to me. So we have Louis Vuitton, Christian Dior. They are donating $226 million. The Pinault family, who controls luxury conglomerate Kering, the owner of brands including Gucci and Yves Saint Laurent, have pledged approximately $113 million in funds for this particular restructuring and reconstruction of La Notre Dame. L'Oreal, $113 million for the restoration efforts. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like our society is certainly, you know, skewed, like our mindset is skewed. It's like we are totally warped. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. When I saw this, I was just like, this is crazy. And so, you know, the one thing I will say is that, I'm happy that there are some celebrities, some public figures out there that do have some sort of sense in all of this. So Pamela Anderson had come out and actually condemned these actions. She condemned the fact that there are whole galas and fundraisers being put on, being conducted, being planned for the restoration of La Notre Dame. Meanwhile, we have children dying because they don't have access to clean water. We have children in inner cities dying still from lead poison, right? We have areas of our country where we have the highest, I guess, amount of childhood asthma going on, right? There's just so many different things going on that I feel like this type of money would be best suited into helping the children, helping the community, combating some of these issues that we endure as a community at large. It just goes to show that, you know, our priorities are really all over the place. Our priorities are skewed. And it's one of those things where it's like, I'm a little concerned as to what the future of our society is when this is where, you know, our money, our effort, our time, and our concern is going toward the restructuring and the reconstruction, rather, of La Notre Dame. I'm not saying that this cathedral does not need to be rebuilt. I'm not saying that. I'm just interested as to what the priorities are, to be very honest. I don't know. It's really troubling to me to see that. And it's also troubling to me. I'd seen a meme and I'd seen some posts. I think it might have been during the same week of the Notre Dame fire. And it was a meme that was talking about, I don't know if it was 3 black churches or 4 black churches in the South that had also been burnt, and nobody had mentioned this. And I, to be honest, didn't know about it until I saw, you know, the posts that were kind of juxtaposing the two, the Notre Dame and the churches in the South that were also burnt, and that nobody was talking about raising money to rebuild these churches, these black churches. Nobody was talking about having a gala or fundraising or anything like that for these churches. In fact, I would dare say for the most part, most people didn't know about, I didn't hear about it. I didn't know about what was going on with these black churches. But at the moment the first flicker of a flame occurred in La Notre Dame, I was aware. My CNN was on fire that day. Like, I was getting play by play on the minute, every minute, news updates about what was going on with La Notre Dame. And it just goes to show, you know, La Notre Dame, you know, white people are concerned about La Notre Dame, white people, celebrities, you know. But with the black churches, nobody really cared. Why are we going to bring attention to it? Nobody really cares. It's black people, black churches, who cares? And it just, again, just goes to just reiterate and reinforce this idea that black people don't really matter when it comes to this society. And it's really sad that it would be one thing if just white people, I guess, were, this was like visible just within the white community, like just seeing how white people are the ones that are showing a lack of disregard for black issues. But it's interesting that, you know, black people are also showing a disregard for black issues. I didn't see any real celebrities talk about these black churches that were burnt down, and that I didn't see any black celebrities, you know, trying to raise money or starting GoFundMes or using their platforms to raise awareness. It was like people like you and me. Well, I was not included because I didn't know about it, but it was regular grassroots people who were trying to bring attention by posting these posts and these articles and whatnot to bring awareness and to show the disparity. I feel like we just need to do better, and we're not doing better. It's like sometimes I feel like we are doing better, but then when I see things like this, I'm like, we really aren't doing better. So I don't know. So that was the womp womp of the week. Well, that was one of the womp womps of the week. So now on a lighter note, let's go back on a lighter note. So for those of you who were not aware, last week, last Saturday, was 420, April 20th. And for some of you, that's like, oh, okay, April 20th, what's that about? Well, April 20th, 420, is a highly celebrated day in not just the U.S., but abroad as well. So for those of you who don't know what 420 is, it's basically part of cannabis culture. It's a day, I mean, when I was in high school, people called it the National Smokeout Day. And so basically, and this is according to Wikipedia, so I'm going to give you this information, but in 1971, there were five high school students, and they called themselves the Waldos because apparently they had this hangout spot that was against a wall in their high school. And they were, in a sense, in search of an abandoned cannabis crop that they had learned about, based on some sort of treasure map by the grower. And so the Waldos designated this Lewis Pasteur statue on the grounds of San Rafael High School as their meeting place. And at 4:20 p.m., as their meeting time. And the Waldos referred to this plan with the phrase 420 Lewis. And so after various failed attempts to find this crop, they eventually shortened their phrase and simply called it 420. Now, over time, this story, I guess, you know, was caught on by journalists. And basically, this story kind of went like fire. And pretty much 420 has become an international countercultural holiday where people gather and celebrate and consume weed, cannabis, all over the world, literally. And so I actually had some friends who were engaged in this, you know, 420 celebration. I was not a part of the celebration, but I've known about it for years. But many people, like, you know, when I say 420, they're like, what does that mean? So that's basically what it means. It's like I said, in high school, we called it the National Smokeout Day, but it's pretty much a day where people gather together and they smoke weed and they, you know, they have fun and they enjoy their lives. And so it's actually an observance. It's not a national holiday, but it's very popular in the streets. So the reason I gave you that background is because I guess our second big up of the week goes to Ben & Jerry's, the famous ice cream brand. And so during the 420 celebrations, Ben & Jerry's came out with a promo video. And in their promo video, they pretty much addressed a racial disparity. And so they used their platform, you know, to celebrate 420, but to also raise awareness about the racial disparity between blacks and or black brown people and white people with regard to weed. And so they went on to basically say that the racial disparity in the criminal justice system when it comes to black people being punished for the same substance white people are profiting from. And it went on to talk about how white millionaires are investing and reaping in the benefits of the taxes, you know, that the cannabis empire is bringing forth. Meanwhile, you have a disproportionate amount of black people who are in jail for basically selling weed. And clearly, I mean, if that's not visible, the disparity is visible to you, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. But what I liked about Ben & Jerry is that they went out to say that this is wrong and it's unfair. And then they also, you know, along with just saying that it's unfair, they also said that, you know what, anybody who's charged with weed needs to have their record expunged. And so they've partnered in a sense with this group called Calvia. It's Calvia brand. And basically the Calvia brand on 420, what they did was they made a donation of 4.20% of their profits. And the money for this profits basically went to this program that assisted in, you know, I guess, clearing the records for individuals who were charged with marijuana crimes. And so I thought this was very, very thoughtful of them. Not just thoughtful, but it was just very empowering because many times brands try to stay away from controversial issues, and they don't necessarily, because, you know, they don't want to lose business on any end. And so they tend to stay away from controversial issues. They tend to stay away from making political statements. But Ben and Jerry, I would say over the years, it's been clear that they're not afraid to stand up for what's right. They're not afraid to stand up for the Black community. They're not afraid to stand up to, you know, any type of injustice. And for them, it's like, if you don't want to buy our ice cream because we're supporting a cause that we believe is right, then don't buy our ice cream. And what's interesting, though, is that I haven't seen any reported loss of Ben and Jerry's stock, Ben and Jerry's sales, as a result of their standing up for what's right. And so I think that Ben and Jerry serve as an example to all of these other brands, whether they be brands owned by Black people, white people, yellow people, or whatever, that, you know, it's important to be part of the political process. It's important to speak out against injustices, because at the end of the day, your consumers are a mixed bag. People who, I mean, I don't know if Black people are buying Ben and Jerry more than white people are, but I know that I love myself some Ben and Jerry, specifically the Cherry Garcia ice cream. And so I think that it's very important that when these, you know, blatant injustices, these blatant disparities are out there, that it's important that these brands stand up for what is right and support, you know, stand up in support for, you know, a large, you know, consumer base. And so the big up, and I keep saying the big up because we had we had another big up, but I would say that Ben and Jerry also gets a big up of the week for this. And so with that being said, everybody, this was my update slash hot topics, I guess, episode. I think it's really important sometimes to talk about some of these issues that pop up in social media and that pop up in the news in general. It's important for us to be aware of some of these issues that are going on, like the dress code fiasco in Houston, Texas. Many people probably weren't aware of this, but I'm pretty sure that there have been dress code policies like this in other jurisdictions. But it was just very interesting how, in this particular case, you know, it was just very clear that, at least to me, that this is an attack on Black people and it's an attack on Black culture. And, you know, it's little news segments and clips like that, I feel like, that we need to be aware of and we need to be privy to, because, you know, it's happening in Houston, Texas. It can happen somewhere else. You know what I mean? And so I think it's important for us as a community to be aware of all of these violations and injustices going on in our community, and for us to figure out, how do we combat this? How do we move forward? How do we fight? And so that's why I like having the big up of the week and the womp womp of the week, just to draw attention to these particular issues and to provide further commentary on them. And so that's pretty much a wrap for this episode of According to RP. I do want to give a final announcement. Last week, if you guys tuned in, you know I had Arde Scarnett, who is the CEO and founder of Ascension Advocacy. And we talked about an event that Free to Women NYC will be hosting on April 30th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Brooklyn Commons, 4955 Flatbush Avenue, second floor, Brooklyn, New York, 11225. It is an event that is focused on sexual assault awareness. As we are in April again, Sexual Assault Awareness Month occurs in April every year. And so every year, Free to Women NYC has an event or a talk, discussion of some sort, to address sexual assault awareness in our community. This year, our focus is on childhood sexual abuse. You know, in light of the surviving R. Kelly and the Michael Jackson Leaving Neverland, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk in the community about these particular issues. However, we still haven't addressed the issue. We'll talk about it when it has something to do with the media, when it has something to do with other people, but we don't want to talk about it when it comes to our community and how we view sexual assault and how we deal with sexual assault. And especially with childhood sexual abuse, there are a lot of people who are walking around with this trauma, even, you know, now that they're adults, they have families and whatnot. But the impact of this all is still being felt, not just by the people who were victimized, but again, just by anybody, by, you know, the children that these individuals have, the family members. It affects relationships and whatnot. And so, again, it's just something that we as a community need to talk about, and we need to address it. We need to begin the healing process. And so if you are in the New York City area next Tuesday, April 30th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Brooklyn Commons, please stop by. We are going to have a rich panel consisting of counselors. We have a representative from the district attorney's office here in Brooklyn, and we're just going to address again the issue of sexual assault, talk about what exactly is sexual assault, what's the impact, etc. So with that being said, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of According to RP. I look forward to talking to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.